flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
That's the kind of energy that you got to start on.
You're
it is
right.
Indeed in the loop here on Sports Radio.
Riders 610. And kids.
That's right. That's right. I'm pretty sure our audience is not comprised of riders and kids. And if it is, we might be in trouble. All right. Let's get going on a Wednesday here in the loop. You got John Lopez. I'm Reginald Atatula, Figgy Fig. The crew, the band's back together. Everybody doing all right? You made it out of your ditch. You made it off the flu. We're all good. We're ready to radio.
Yeah.
What a time.
Man, we'll get into that. It was wild. 1220 confession. People thought I died.
But did you?
No. Okay. I don't think so.
All right, cool. Perfectly.
Man, you all right? You all right? Everything okay?
I'm glad that we were able to keep you on your toes, though. We kept you working by calling and appreciate you answering the phone.
I really enjoyed that. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I actually told my wife, I said, I got to put sound on my phone. That was good.
Yeah. Figgy didn't get the memo. Figgy was like,
I was the real person that should have been checked on.
Yeah.
Now, you're right. And you know what? I would like to start the show by apologizing for not checking on you to make sure that the flu diagnosis did not take you out, but I'm glad to know that you're good and you're well and you're here with us. You, the dear listener, you are also here with us, and we appreciate it if you get involved with the program. The YouTube is on Sports Radio 610. Hop in the chat where I'm already seeing Michael and Turbo Duran. We got people in there as well. Hop in, talk to them. Twitch also up for you. And then, of course, the text line 713-572-4610. And I want to circle back around to this as... Look, man, as soon as we hit the offseason, it's like, what can we do to fix this Texans team?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's plenty of time for all of it, but let's dip our toe into the water if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Because fixing this offense is, I think, point number one. Offense ended up being, actually, let me ask this as a question, because sometimes making these declarative statements can get you in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like this offense this year was a disappointment? Or is that the way that you felt? Because at times, and I mean, for a large swath or portion of the season, mm-hmm. it felt like a team that came in being described as a five-headed monster and all that did not at all live up to the hype that was given to it.
Easy answer, right? It was absolutely a disappointment. Absolutely a disappointment. I mean, you go back to the expectations and everything. The problem is, as it's a disappointment, and you know, nobody really cares anymore if they showed any semblance of a improvement at the end. The problem is, where was the biggest fix? Where's the biggest fix need to be? Because is it the offensive line? You know, you got to start in the trenches. Is it the system? The system didn't work. Is it something else? Is it as simple as wide receivers? Is it the running game? I think ultimately what we're looking at right here, I'll put it this way. What D'Amico Ryans did Monday in his walkaway press conference, hey, we're going to take a week to make some decisions. Reggie, that's not a little thing. It takes 12 hours and sometimes less for these types of decisions to be made. So that should tell us they're trying to figure out what the best path is as well.
Sure.
You know?
Certainly.
And that's a big decision.
Absolutely. Let's work on some of those things. So you mentioned a couple of things. Change the system, change key players. Does it feel like that's a one or the other proposition, or that might be a holistic thing? Because, yeah, man.
Are you going to change offensive coordinator, offensive line coach, and three offensive linemen? You can do that?
It's possible. Well, I mean, here's the thing. You change offensive coordinator, you're basically changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, offense line and everything, or line coach anyways, right?
Yeah.
That ends up being a thing. If you get rid of the man at the top, the, you know, the collateral damage on a move like that is all of the, you know, other coaches that a new offense coordinator is likely to kind of make their hires on, that those seats are not necessarily very comfortable at that point. But yeah, man, then you have to ask about the players, and it feels like that part you have to do some changes on. Like, it's been abundantly clear, no matter what you feel about Bobby Slowick, it has been clear that the offensive line, as they were constituted, did not get the job done. The thing that we talked about a little bit yesterday with Chris Partee sitting in for you was just how many of those need to shift. I think you had my guy, Brandon Scott, who joined us on the phone, you know, because there was all this snow or whatever. He's going three.
I've said three all along.
You're going three. Yeah. I was like, I wonder if you can get to three, if two. But in a vacuum, I probably go, yeah, you want to make these huge changes. The question that immediately comes up to me is how many of those are feasible to make, because you've got three dudes on eight-figure salaries. You know what I mean? And those, like, the contractual situation does not make it easy for those. So, like, how much can you even change in that regard if that's the way that you want to shift it?
Look, let's go back in time a little bit. Bobby Slowick comes in with his system, okay? We got to look at this logically. He comes in with his system. He inherited Laremy Tunsil. He inherited Titus Howard.
That's right.
And Shaq Mason, what was the situation there? I think he came in that year, I believe, the year that Bobby Slowick came in. And Shaq Mason was effective his first year. So if you inherited these things, it's kind of like what you're talking about with when you get a new offensive coordinator. By default, you know, the collateral damage, as you put it, is you're going to get other coaches.
And you're right. Shaq Mason came to the Texans
the year that Slowick did. So If he inherited these guys, you have to ask yourself, are they his guys in his perfect system? But then the counterpoint to that is, if you change three players on the offensive line that don't fit your system, isn't it easier to change the system?
Well, and this is one of the things that I found interesting yesterday. You know, just scrolling on X, as they call it. I'm just never going to stop calling it Twitter. I apologize. I understand. But just scrolling on Twitter yesterday, seeing our friend DJ Bieniemy, covers the Texans for ESPN, and actually I will say that I think it was John Crumpler who actually was like posting the videos that ultimately, you know, DJ responded to, where it's like, hey man, you're seeing in the playoffs that this team running the football, you know, that they wanted to be an outside zone team. They declared themselves an outside zone team. They're running gap scheme. They're running inside zone. Like, that is a clear deviation from what the hard-nosed run approach had been from Bobby Slowick and this team. And DJ added in that, yeah, it seems like players had been asking for such things. They've already made a change to the system when they got to the place where we need to go and make some things shake. So when you ask change the system, absolutely. Whether or not Bobby is here, which also then brings up the idea of, hey, no need to soft pedal this. This was fundamental to Bobby Slowick's offense. The idea of, we're running the football particularly in this way. This is how this system works. You run the football and you throw off of that. And they made a shift for the playoffs, in order to make the change in the system. It feels like that is inherently something that's going to be needed to be done. And that might also speak to feasibility of Bobby Slowick not being the coordinator here.
Well, and what kind of power does he have if, let's say, you know, let's say they ran that one series against the Titans because they wanted to see how things might look, you know, with a different approach on the running game. Let's say that was the case.
Okay.
All right. That means that Bobby Slowick no longer was running his system.
That's right.
And then we go into the postseason and the running game was decent, you know, in the postseason. We talked about, what did Mixon have, 88 yards against the Chargers or something like that?
Yeah. And you do remember the weirdest stuff.
I remember the weirdest crap, and I can't tell you, you know, like, stuff that happened this morning. But either way.
What did you eat for breakfast?
Oh, I didn't bring it. I ended up getting a granola bar.
Look at you.
It took me a while. But, okay, so if Bobby Slowick no longer
had 88 yards against the Chiefs.
It was, good Lord, I can't believe that. Anyway, so if Bobby Slowick changed the way they approach the run game in the most important games of the year, the last game of the season and going into the postseason, is he the guy? Are they tied up with him? And that's why I keep going back to this. They're trying to make that decision themselves. You don't take 5 days to make this decision. Yeah. You just don't in the NFL. It's quick. And because, by the way, coaches that maybe you have your eye on, are starting to go to other teams, or whatever it may the case may be. So this is huge what they're trying to decide. Frankly, I would change the players, and here's why I would do it.
To make sure that Bobby remains like in that circumstance, or just entirely
not necessarily because I love what Bobby has showed us, but Bobby hasn't showed us with his guys, and I think D'Amico Ryans loves Bobby Slowick.
I mean, we know
believes in the system.
That was the first call when mm-hmm. D'Amico Ryans got the job. I think if you can extrapolate that fairly to understanding that he really likes that dude and appreciates that dude.
Yeah, and believes in the system because it has been his most successful offense to complement his defense since the San Francisco days.
Okay, I was about to say, are we talking about the dude who's only been here 2 years?
No, I'm saying his defense is a great complement to what that offense kind of does. And then the last thing that I think is important here is, you know, Laremy Tunsil, Tytus Howard, and Shaq Mason, if I had to guess today, they're gone. Because they're going to try to get players on the offensive line that fit that system and can complement what the defense does. Not only that, you have a superstar quarterback. And you got to do everything you can to keep that consistency with that quarterback. He likes this offense, I believe, C.J. Stroud. Mm-hmm. It hadn't been successful because of the run game and protections. So you can't, you know, it's not just Bobby Slowick you're making a decision on. It's C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, but this is where it comes back to how easy is this? And this is where I end up in the place where we start talking about, salaries, right? Laremy Tunsil for next season, his cap hit is like $29 million, mm-hmm. right? And I imagine... Yes, yeah. A lot of money, right? Base salary, $20 million. It's one of those things where you're going to need to do some negotiation there anyways, but an outright cut there? Yeah. Not going to be easy to deal with. Will you be able to find a trade partner? I don't know, right? Like, moving off of that particular player, going to be quite the undertaking. That is one individual player. You bring it back around to Tytus Howard. You want to move off him? There, maybe you can have a situation where you possibly mm-hmm. you cut him outright. Like, maybe that one's a little bit more manageable, seeing as his cap number is $23 million, and you can maybe get yourself a cap saving or like a cap savings of like, $14 million mm-hmm. if he's like a post June 1 cut, mm-hmm. or what have you. All right. Shaq Mason, another guy who cap hit, talking about like $15 million. These are big numbers. These are all of these guys exist within the top six or seven of the cap hits that mm-hmm. you have on the books for next year. Yeah. Those are not easy numbers to navigate. And so that's going to be quite the undertaking if you want to get rid of all of them. And if you, like, once you do that, you don't immediately have a replacement for at least one of them. Like you don't have a replacement for one of them, and that's playing conservatively, saying that, hey, Blake Fisher's your new, tackle, whichever one of those you ultimately change, and then you go, all right, we're just going to completely lean into, the Juice Scruggs at guard or what have you, right? If you lean into one of those things, you still don't have a full accounting of what you're going to do going forward there. But I hear you, though.
Yeah, but
if you are indeed changing the system, or if you, like, honestly, even if you're not changing the system, it's been made abundantly clear. Mm-hmm. Those guys don't fit the run portion of this, right?
No.
The idea, because again, you got down to the most important games of this season, mm-hmm. and you had to shift what you were doing, and that's when you saw a level of success.
And keep in mind, the players know this too. Laremy Tunsil and Tytus Howard and Shaq Mason, they talk to their agents every week, if not sometimes every day.
Yeah.
They know that this is not what I want to do, maybe, or what I can do. They're big dudes that can't get to the second level. They want to be in a system that is maybe more power and double teaming guards and tackles and all that other stuff. So a trade is not necessarily off the table for one or more of these guys, because the players, Laremy Tunsil knows he don't want to go to the second level. You know, he don't want to, you know, get an angle on somebody and then chase down an outside linebacker from the other side.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a long time.
What you trying to say, lazy or something?
Yes, that's
come
what I'm saying.
Man.
That's been a frequent thing that's been levied against Laremy in particular, is the idea of, oh, you want to do the things.
That man got a family,
Yeah.
That is true, he does have a family.
Figgy wants to put words in my mouth, and I will take them.
Wow.
And I will take them. You know, Tytus Howard is a big dude that doesn't want to necessarily run 15 yards on every play.
And it's one of the things that that really hurts, like, yeah, screenplays as they were designed, yes, with Bobby Slowick. Mm-hmm. There's many a times where you could recall a play where it's like, all right, here's the, you know, you got your initial blocker in the wide receiver. Mm-hmm. We get out to Nico Collins, and what's supposed to happen is this left tackle is supposed to get out there, yes, and get some blocks out in space, and it just doesn't happen.
And they're going, nah, man. Nah, man, I ain't doing that. So they have a say in this. They might want to get traded. Their agents might be working things. Now, you're not going to necessarily fleece anybody, but at this point, it almost doesn't matter. You got to get the right guys in here, because I think DeMeco loves Bobby Slowick. I think he loves the system. I think C.J. Stroud respects and likes Bobby Slowick. I think he likes and respects Gerard Johnson. So CJ's a factor here. The relationship is a factor here. They go back a long way. You know, those three players, as crazy as it sounds, might be the smartest move.
And remaining, man, that's, look, man, DeMeco Ryans, like, this is the point in time, and you know, where you get to a place, and I think it was the Bill O'Brien quote, I think, mm-hmm, that John Harris was talking about, the idea of, hey, man, when you really when you're a coach, you really come into your own when you have to learn who you have to, which of your friends you ultimately have to fire, you, mm-hmm, right? And so this is going to be an interesting week. What DeMeco Ryans and Nick Caserio ultimately decide when it comes to this personnel is going to be interesting, because if you do bring Bobby Slowick back and you get a third year of, you know, a lack of progress, mm-hmm, one, you will have, again, you know, wasted is not the right word necessarily, because, you know, I have to be very careful about, mm-hmm, the way that you operate with.
But kind of wasted.
You will kind of wasted. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you kind of wasted another year of cheap C.J. Stroud, yeah, which feels like the way that you win in this modern iteration of the NFL, where you get, you know, cheap quarterback play, mm-hmm, especially if you get good quarterback play, and boom, here we go. Yeah. We can make some things shake. You will have wasted that. And then two, like, you will have gotten to a place where now you have to bring, there hasn't been heat on DeMeco Ryans, and, mm-hmm, I don't think there should be. At that point, it's like, okay, are you making decisions that actively hurt your team while you're very rightfully saying, you know, I want to take this team to levels that they haven't been before, and you've done a lot of the things right, you know, to then have a major thing in a situation where on the offense he has a lot of leeway, Bobby Slowick.
Yeah.
He would have to get it right if you did bring him back, and I'm not sure how many people are in that same boat as you where they feel comfortable even if just getting the offensive line changed,
yeah,
is the way that you go.
I think, you know, the ultimate question as well, I go back to CJ, did he have confidence in this offensive line? He liked them, I'm sure. But he didn't have confidence in this line. We saw it on the field.
Yeah,
it on the field.
It was obvious in the way that he played.
Maybe he'll have more confidence with new guys and a better system blocking, run blocking.
There's a lot of there's gonna be a lot of time to talk about this offense and how they are constructed. But yeah, it's what's evident is that there are big shifts that are needed, particularly on the offensive line. We'll keep going with that here on Sports Radio 610. It is a Wednesday in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. We got a lot of things coming on the day, but Adam Spolane is supposed to join us at 10:40. So coming up next, let's get into our question of the day. Inspired by Marlon Humphrey, a man recently retired from the playoffs, what is your pure hater sports opinion? Like, you could just acknowledge.
Not just people.
No, I mean, just like, hey, man, this is just pure hate. Like, I'm not necessarily coming with all facts here. This is inspired by hate. 713-572-4610. Your pure hater sports opinions. Next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
He has hit him big time.
Let's get in the loop.
You better get ready because we're going to show up and show up.
With John Lopez.
It is what it is, means nothing.
And Reggie Adetula.
And that, my friends, is a scorigami.
Always live, always local.
713, what's the damn number? 572-4610.
You're in the loop on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. Hope you're having a good one on this Wednesday. And hit us up on the text line, 713-572-4610, as we do our question of the day. What is your pure hater sports opinion? Again, just based off of just hateration, maybe not even maybe acknowledging that, you know, it might not be necessarily all based in facts. You might be having a little hate. There's a space for that right here in this segment, because Marlon Humphrey, you know him, he's a cornerback that plays for the Baltimore Ravens. They got knocked out in the divisional round this weekend. And
God bless Marlon Humphrey for what he said.
Yeah, God bless him. I feel like there's a lot of Texans fans that are rolling with Marlon Humphrey in this moment. Probably just a lot of football fans that are rolling with Marlon Humphrey, as the Chiefs have kind of become some level of like evil empire in some ways. We love the natural arc of build you up to become a dynasty and then tear you down because we believe that you win it too much. That is where the Chiefs are at some ways. And Marlon Humphrey got on Twitter yesterday at 1:57 p.m. And said, "I have no reason of saying this other than being a hater. The Bills or whatever NFC team has got to beat the Chiefs. We can't let them keep getting away with this." Just pure hateration. And he acknowledged it. He's like, "Look, man, I'm just being a hater. I acknowledge it.
Good for him, by the way.
One of these teams got to win." And it wasn't even like, "They will win." It wasn't like, "I believe in the Bills. They look good this year. They're running the football well. They've got, you know, the defense actually stepped up, stopping the run against the Ravens." No, it wasn't none of that. It was just one of these other teams, one of these other three teams needs to win because I need these Chiefs to go down.
Yeah.
And so I was like, "Look, man, I appreciate the spirit of being a hater coming out. So let's all get into the spirit of being a hater real quick and get your hater opinions out."
First of all, God bless him, because I think he's speaking for the masses there. All-star games. Every all-star game now. It used to be just a couple here and there, or maybe one that you didn't like. I think every all-star game, I just hate them. Just pick a sport outside of hockey. Because hockey, the thing with hockey is most people don't watch hockey across the country. I know certain areas are it's rampant.
Yeah, it's very, very regional.
It's very regional.
Yeah.
So, like, hockey, when there's no defense played and they have all these skills competitions and stuff and all this offense, you're like, "Hey, wow, look at the skills of these guys." So it actually helps hockey, you know, to have that.
If you say so. It feels like they've been cycling.
Well, I'm saying
all-star.
It's entertaining. It's good to watch on Twitter or whatever. But MLB, it's nonsense.
One of those people that believed it was better when there were stakes on it?
No. Okay. But I think they played harder. One thing I irrationally hate is that they don't use their team's uniforms.
Yeah, I love it. I'm back in. I just hate that they
come up with these uniforms. NBA. Love the NBA. Your all-star game is garbage.
Well, you got Mike Daigneault will be the Western Conference, coach, as you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder have clinched that one seed
for
the West. So him and an assistant will coach two of the four teams in the little round robin tournament. I think the same thing will go.
And the NFL doesn't even care anymore. They just raised the white flag altogether. Screw it.
They're like, it's not even one game. We're just going to put on some content for ESPN. Y'all come watch.
It's ridiculous.
Figgy, I want to get to your hater opinion here. I realized as I was thinking about this, there's a few of them. But the one that I just kind of want to get off of my chest, and I realized this year especially, because remember, the AL Central was really good this year. Like, it was really good. I don't give a damn about no Central teams. I don't know. You couldn't get me to care about the Twins, the Guardians, or the Royals. I just do not care.
White Sox.
And again, it is pure hateration because, like, they were good this year. I mean, the Guardians were good they this year. I mean, 92-win team. I just couldn't care. I could not care any, like, just I don't care about the Central divisions. And maybe that was built off of being pretty mediocre for, like, a decade. But I was just like, I don't give a damn about no Central division teams. AL or NL, to be completely honest. Actually, that's not true. There's a couple NL Central teams that I care about.
I hate the way the NBA pay some of these players that we have no idea who they are or how overrated they are, man. I'm gonna bring it up. Tobias Harris.
Yeah.
I hate how much he makes. And look, it's not my money. Shout out to Spillane. Adam Spillane.
That's right.
It's not my money, but I hate the way they pay these players.
You're not wrong. It's like there are guys that I'm like, who?
Yeah.
He got a 5-year, $80 million contract.
Yeah. I'm like, it's just like, man, like as much.
Everybody's Timofey Mozgov now. Yeah.
Fam, as much as we've been talking about Tobias Harris, how he never show up in the playoffs. I think Kendrick Perkins said, if you send them to Chipotle for some food, he'd come back with a bag full of napkins. This dude got $50 million a year this offseason, man.
You know who agrees with you on this take? Every football player. Yes. Like they are all like, hey, man, how is it? And, of course, there are reasons, right? There, like, the economics makes sense, and yet still nobody cares. Hey, like, how the hell is Franz Wagner making $45 million a year?
And this is why I really hate it, too, because, I don't want to be that person that tried to bring it to real life.
Mm-hmm.
But stuff been going up all around this country.
Yeah.
And my paycheck ain't going up. Like, so the NBA
But Rudy Gobert can make $41 million somehow?
Just because you get a new TV contract, now you got to get paid more?
You want to be sick? Tobias Harris, career earnings, $273 million.
Man.
$273 million.
He'll get you a solid 15 whenever you need.
$1 million.
That is ridiculous.
Also, when you need more,
yeah,
he'll get you 15.
Yeah.
Some other things that are coming on the text line. Shout out to Ocho coming up strong today with the hateration. And buddy, look, Ocho is going to make himself, if he was not already one, a villain on the text line. Mm-hmm. So 713-572-4610, where he started off the morning as tuning in as I explain why I think Billy Wagner is only a Hall of Famer relative to other undeserving Hall of Famers he's better than. Boy, really? That's where you come in with Billy Wagner is undeserved. That is pure hateration. Man,
Ocho knows a lot.
There.
Ocho knows a lot of sports. He really does. He doesn't know squat on this. Squat.
That is real hateration.
Ocho, compare Billy Wagner's numbers to, I don't know, Mariano Rivera. Compare every number to that. Billy Wagner, long overdue. We're going to dig in on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of numbers, but one of the ones that I can give you just right off top, 2.231 career ERA is the lowest amongst left-handed pitchers in the live ball era.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, if you have 500 innings pitched, but what are we talking about if you don't have 500 innings pitched? That's a Hall of Fame candidate. Man, what are we talking about? No, what are you doing right now?
I respect the guy's a great fan, all that stuff. But doesn't know squat on this.
Wow, he said he had more confidence in Brad Lidge and Dotel than Billy Wagner. Wow, you being a real hater. That is real hater.
What'd he do to you, man?
Way to come with the energy here. That is crazy. From the 713, officiating motorsports stewards and the overhyping of overrated players like Lamar. Okay, this is real hateration. And the lack of calling out officiating that aid Patrick Mahomes. Okay, so you was just letting the chopper win. The idea of the overrated players like Lamar Jackson, there you go. You got that. You got some hateration in there. But it's tough with Lamar now because Lamar is in this place where there's nothing that he can do as a player in the regular season. There's nothing he can do as a player in the early portions of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It's just going to come down to, does he win in a championship game? Does he win a Super Bowl? Like, that's all this is now.
That's because
all the other criticisms, he's not a good passer, right? All these other things. Can he be consistent running the football, or can he be like a sustainable run the football? Oh man, he's going to get hurt. He's been doing all of those things. It's just the cartoonish fumbles and turnovers and mistakes that end up keeping the Ravens out of the place that they absolutely should be.
But to be fair, that's a good reason to hate him.
No, it is.
And people are comparing him, I don't know if it's fair or not, actually, I was going to say unfairly, to James Harden. I mean, it's fair.
It is.
It's fair.
Yeah, speaking of running the ball, I hate the way Patrick Mahomes run the ball, man. To me, it's not fair, and I feel like he gained in the system a little bit. He's really gained in the system, and it's impossible to hit him.
Yeah.
Like, if you hit him any type of way, then that's a flag, and I feel like he just be out there cheating when he run, man.
Sideline interviews. Hate him. I used to like him. I don't know why, and I guess there's still some guys that are better at them than others, but it's like, just what a complete waste of time. You just want to, the networks are just sort of flexing, like, we can get the coach coming off the sideline. He doesn't say squat. The questions are cupcake, predetermined. It's silly.
What a hater. All right, some other ones that have come in on the text line. They said, bleep Dallas, the Cowboys, the Rangers, the Mavericks, the Stars, and this is where it really became hater opinions. and all their little league teams and high schools. Bleep Dallas. All right, yeah. I was like, the teams, I get it, right? It's the natural city. It's just the city rival in Texas, right?
Yeah.
The Houston-Dallas thing. You got to the little league. What did the babies do to you? The little league teams?
Yeah.
He said, bleep their Pop Warner.
I like this one, Bills Mafia.
That is interesting, and we'll talk more about Bills Mafia, because Bills Mafia, I also have that hater rate. Like, and they don't do nothing but jump through tables and donate to people's charity.
Yeah.
And yet and still, they're annoying somehow.
Yeah.
They just are. I agree with you there. All right, keep those coming in on the text line, 713-572-4610. Your pure hater opinion. Salute to Marlon Humphrey just being a Chiefs hater. Like, I don't care. Bills, whoever, they just got to lose. All right, coming up next, let's welcome in our guy, Baseball Spo, to talk a little bit about, I guess, the interesting situation the Astros find themselves in, but obviously, more importantly, these Rockets as they head into a matchup against one of the best teams in the NBA, the Cavs. We'll do that next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Baseball Spo, Baseball Spo, Baseball Spo.
Yeah, man, he is here. Sporting a very nice kind of, it looks almost vintage, Oakland A's jacket to know that he is indeed Baseball Spo. It's Adam Spillane. What's happening, my man?
Just, it's always good to have friends who work for teams, and you can say when you get laid off, like, hey, send me some stuff.
That's right.
And they'll just go right into the clubhouse and send you some stuff.
Exactly.
How much you want for that jacket?
It's going to cost you a lot.
Think about that number. We'll circle back around at the end of the segment.
I had a good week on NFL, so I don't really need it right now.
Oh, look at that. Wow. Look at that.
You know that was my squad when I was a kid, man.
He said, if you catch me when maybe the parlay's not hit, and we can make a deal.
I've got a Ray, you know, an honoring Ray Fossey patch that
Ooh.
I can give you.
Ooh.
I got a bunch of those.
Oh, that was my guy.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I'll
deals
bring that
being
by.
Made. Yeah. You love to see it. All right, speaking of deals being made or the potential of deals being made, I didn't realize that Joe Espada would be talking to anybody in this time, but apparently there was a little bit of audio of Joe Espada, and I think this came through on Monday, and I just was fascinated to hear this. This is Joe Espada talking about Alex Bregman.
Well, he has not signed with anyone, right? So we here still, you know, open. Our arms are still open. The door's still open. There's always a chance, right? But right now, we are still in conversations with not only him, but with other free agent players. So we'll see. We'll see.
I mean,
no, you're not.
Are we for real in a place where the Astros would still have any ability or even willingness to sign Alex Bregman at this point?
I mean, they have the ability. It's just that they're not going to. And it's fine. And it's just Joe being diplomatic. And that's what Joe is. Joe is a diplomatic person.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to shut. I mean, he was the one who was really, I mean, him and Altuve were at the forefront of how much they needed him, how much they needed to bring him back, how much he'd meant to the club over these last however many years. But yeah, it is known that it's not going to happen. They made their offer. Bregman turned it down, and they moved on quickly. That's the one thing that you kind of learn about Dana Brown, is that he moves quick. And you saw it last year with Hader when, all right, Kendall Graveman out for the year. 3 days later, whatever, they sign Hader. This year, all right, you know, Bregman turns down the offer. And then they go out and they make the Tucker trade, and they make they think they have the Arenado trade done. Arenado says no. They pivoted real quick and made the move to go get Christian Walker. So they don't waste a lot of time. And obviously, that's why Bregman isn't coming back. That's among the reasons why Bregman isn't coming back. But no, there's zero chance.
Sounds like D'Amico Ryan saying, yeah, I got J.J. Watt's number.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's a good way to put it. they are, I think it's within, they're within $4 million of the CBT. They don't want to go over the CBT again.
$4 million deal then? Average annual value?
Yeah, Come on, man.
I don't think Bregman's going to go for that. I don't think Boris will allow him to go for that. I don't know if the union will allow him to go for that. But yeah, it's a nice thought, but there's no place on the field for him now, just because of the moves that they have made. So yeah, it is Joe being very diplomatic.
Real quick, and this does not have to be in depth because it feels like, but just, we're still in this holding pattern for outfielder. Like, does it feel like that is entirely dependent on a Ryan Pressly trade?
I mean, that impacts how much you have to spend.
Okay.
Just because, again, if they're $4 million below the CBT, I think it's somewhere around $4 million below the CBT, and Pressly counts for 14. your options are pretty slim for what you can get for $4 million,
mm-hmm.
especially if you want to have a little bit of room to add or subtract, you know, to add guys once the season starts. So I do think that they would like to get Presley off their books one way or another. It's going to be hard, though, just because the money that he makes and the fact that he can veto any trade. And so, and they're probably going to have to take on some of that money, too.
But they have to, don't they?
What?
Well, you know, because Presley...
And, yeah, but it takes two to tango.
I know, so but
three to tango in this instance.
But you have to make it an incentive-type deal.
What, for Presley?
For Presley.
I mean, you can tell Presley, hey, you're going to get to close again. Maybe that's all the incentive that he needs. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Presley, and this is why you have the no trade, and this is why you have the ability to veto a trade, is that you can say, hey, okay, I'll take the trade, but you got to add another 14 to the contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to give me another year. And whether it's there's an option to it or something, you've got to give me something in order to waive the no trade. And that's why you have those rights.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the player gets those rights, is that they have the ability to dictate where they play, and it allows them to have some control in the situation where most of the time you don't have a lot of control. There's not a lot out there. I know I've seen Jurickson and Profar linked to them, who's great clubhouse guy, mm-hmm. had the best year of his career last year with the Padres, wound up hitting third for them. But he's kind of bounced around, so I don't know if that's the guy that gets you excited, but he'd probably be an upgrade over what they have in the outfield right now.
I personally would like Jurickson Profar. It felt like he had to find his space, because he bounced around a little bit, but once he got to the Padres, it felt like he was able to solidify
his play. Was one of baseball's best prospects for a long time.
He was.
He's coming up with the Rangers, so it's a it's an interesting guy, and again, great clubhouse guy, which I think with the Astros matters, especially when kind of looking to kind of fill in the blank spots of your roster. Like, you're not looking for stars at this point. You're just looking for guys to fill out your roster. I think that's a good guy to go get.
How concerning for you, you know, pivoting to the Rockets, was that loss on Monday? Day game, 1 p.m. start against a team that is not as bad as we have gotten used to them being, the Detroit Pistons, but also should not compare with this Rockets team. How concerning for you was the start for that game and ultimately a loss against that team?
It didn't really matter to me.
Okay.
I think that you look at they kind of – and. They sleptwalked, or at least the first quarter of that game. And it's an early start. And plus, they flew from Portland on Monday. Or they flew back from Portland on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a long flight back from Portland. You know, it's a long road trip, a long flight back. You're going to be a little tired in that sort of...
no shoot around.
Nothing at all. I thought they played really well in the second quarter. Now, why they fell out and why they fell flat in the second half, that's another story. And
that's
something that's, you know, the fact that you had Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün both play really poor games and both only play 30 minutes in that game, which was not the plan going in, but it's because of how poorly they played. I think that's maybe a little bit concerning, but it's one. It's one out of 82, and, you know, games like that will happen. You also, though, you saw how good Cade Cunningham is.
Yeah.
And that was just a masterclass. That third quarter, 19-point third quarter, I mean, most of that is on Dylan Brooks and Amen Thompson, two of the better defenders, two of the best defenders in the entire league. And, like, he did everything right there. So, like, he's coming into his own, and I think that's the one thing that you take away from that game is Cade Cunningham is that guy.
Yeah. Now you got the Cavaliers coming in with offense.
Yeah.
It's a tough defense. They got both.
Well, they're like top 10 in defense, but they are an offensive team with a lot of ways to get you. And that's the proverbial, you know, get right game if they can do something.
It's funny how what coaching can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you look like with the Rockets, and I shouldn't put the Rockets totally in this category because they actually started winning last year. They tried to win last year as opposed to the years before. But when you, like, completely change your culture and change out a lot of things, like you look at Detroit last year, you know, Monty Williams, they win 14 games. Now all of a sudden they bring in J.B. Bickerstaff and they might be a playoff team.
Right.
Cleveland, they have J.B. Bickerstaff. He gets them to the second round. They bring in Kenny Atkinson, and all of a sudden, like, he completely turns something on with that offense to make them a viable title contender. It reminds you a little bit of, remember, Mark Jackson and Steve Kerr in Golden State?
Oh, absolutely.
Where Mark Jackson kind of gave them that foundation, like that defensive foundation, but it was Kerr who really unlocked their offense. That's kind of what you're seeing now with Cleveland. But that's a really good team. That's a good team that has some, I mean, Donovan Mitchell's playing at an incredibly high level. He's figured out how to play with Darius Garland.
Right.
And Evan Mobley, like, this is the 2021 draft where it's Cade Cunningham number one, Jalen Green number two, Evan Mobley number three, and really all three of those guys have come into their own this year. But you look at the schedule coming up, it's Cleveland tonight. Then you have another Cleveland game coming up on Saturday. There's a Boston game in there. There's a Atlanta game in there. Like, this is not an easy stretch for the Rockets. I think they go to Minneapolis at one point on this trip. So it's a good thing that they have the cushion that they have right now.
Yeah, and you talked a lot there, and I feel like it's all interesting, and I want to be able to talk about all of it. Unfortunately, we don't have quite that time, but the game against the Pistons, Alperen Şengün was not playing all that well, and that is not an anomaly necessarily. It feels like, at the very least, he hasn't been finishing well.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that you can point to with him, what have you seen from Alperen this year? Is there anything like that you have insight-wise as to why it hasn't quite looked the same as years past or even earlier in the season?
I thought it might be health, and I've had some people tell me that he hasn't been totally healthy, but then I ask him, and he says he's completely healthy. He's 100%, and that hasn't been an issue. The finishing, though, like the shots at the rim, have mm-hmm. like that was something that he was at like 40%
mm-hmm.
on shots in the restricted area at the start of the year, which was like 82nd out of 83 who had like 10 attempts
mm-hmm.
at that point. He's gotten better, but it's not necessarily the finishing. It's the starts.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way that he is starting games has been a real issue to the point. I think he was 2 of 10 maybe to start the game against Detroit the other day. He got completely worked by Jalen Duren.
Yes, he did.
Really that entire day. And one of the things that he said is like he's got to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's on him. It's like start games better. Like he can't sleepwalk through these games. And a lot of times it's Fred VanVleet like waking, essentially, quote unquote, waking,
slapping
him
around a little
like
bit.
Saying,
yeah.
Hey, you got to get going because we need you. We can't win these games without you.
Well, keep in mind, Ime was not exactly high on him to start the year either.
Well, it's an interesting kind of relationship just because he's not necessarily the type of big that I think Ime loves.
No,
because Ime wants the athletes. Ime wants the defensive guys. But I do think that you give Şengün credit for improving the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's been a very good defensive player this season. And the other thing that he's really improved is the rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
And so while Ime might not love certain aspects of Şengün's game, Ime loves the offensive rebounding, and Şengün's been really good on mm-hmm. the offensive glass this season. And he's also been much better on the defensive glass as well. So he's got to get better with the finishing stuff. It is hard for me to think that you can have a center who is going to be less than 60% from the restricted area.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's something that can't happen just because when you miss shots in that on that area of the floor, you make things a lot tougher on your defense.
Yep.
Yeah. And it was interesting because Sam Amick wrote a really interesting it was like a little bit of a Q&A kind of meets profile. Interesting thing for The Athletic. We'll maybe highlight some of the things that we drew from it later in the show. But he gave a lot of praise to Ime on, why he's developed, the trust that Ime has put in him, and honestly, him becoming more of a first and second option rather than a fourth, fifth option that he had been early on. So I'm interested to see like how much, how much that continues to grow. But I guess we'll see what that looks like tonight versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. What are you most looking forward, or what are your eyes going to be trained on in this game?
I'm kind of curious just in Cleveland more than anything.
Okay.
I want to see Evan Mobley. I want to see this version of Evan Mobley with Kenny Atkinson
mm-hmm.
just to see how different it looks. And then you do want to see Şengün against the shot blockers, because I think that's where he struggled a little bit this season, is just having to deal with the length of guys and finishing over them. You've got Jared Allen on that team. You've
yep.
got Evan Mobley on that team that
yeah.
he's going to have to deal with. So how does he, can he, because there have been times where like last year he was really physical. Like he was really physical with Wembanyama and he had that 41-point game. So he was able to use his physicality against Victor. Can he use his physicality against the two centers for the Cavs tonight?